is Hockey Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Okay, a lot of grist for the mill. Lots to get to today. Glad you're aboard. To kick off the weekend, we start today on this Monday. Have no idea what's going to happen come Friday alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. The weekend that was has come and gone. A number of issues, certainly around Leafland and around the entire NHL. News coming out today. New Jersey placing Corey Schneider on waivers. 2 years remaining on that contract. Like six a copy. Jonathan Drouin, wrist surgery. Paul Byron, knee surgery. Things looking good with the Montreal Canadiens in one regard and very bad in another. We'll begin in Leafland. Real quick gloss over the weekend, do the fast five and come back and get a little bit more into the Maple Leaf situation. Anthony Stewart, you get the first baton. You get the first whack at the pinata. Make the candies fall. What happened on Saturday?
The predictable. So this is not the Mighty Ducks or a Disney story where you think, you know, we're going to make some minor changes. We're going to bring in the minor league goalie. And he's going to come and save the day.
You guys got to work on the power play.
So for me, it's a little bit disappointing, you know, just with the narrative. Okay, we got Zach Hyman coming back. He's going to come back and be the Hulk and change things physically. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a guy come up from the minors and save the day. But those are minor cogs in this Toronto Maple Leaf wheel where there are some major problems. There's some major holes. And you're going into Pittsburgh against a team that's missing two of their top players in Letang and Crosby. That's a game you have to win. And they came out, you know, not too bad the first couple minutes of the period. They have some major shots, some scoring chances, but they just didn't have that compete. So you can't blame the fitness levels. This is the NHL. They're in prime time shape. They're just, they don't have that compete. They just look like they quit. And when you're in the NHL and you got 18 players, 20 players looking like they're checked out. Yeah. There's major problems. And for me, it points towards the coaching staff. And I've had coaches over the years where you have a team buying in for the entire season, quarter season, but you have to find a way to rally the troops. But for me, the Leafs look like they don't care and they're just waiting for something to happen. So something has to change, whether it's coaching staff, where I think it's too late now, too early in the season or too late in the process to make a move there. But something has to change, whether it's a trade, which is tough because they have very, you know, difficult cap situation. But we can't just expect different results with the same thing, the same team, same game plan, same coaching philosophy. If that's the case, you're going to see it's going to get worse than what it already is.
You know, our assistant program director, Ryan Fabro, said this to me as I came in the building this morning, Justin. I wish I didn't hate my team.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that going around Toronto, the people listening right now, driving in this morning, having lunch with their buddies. I really wish I didn't hate my team.
Yeah. That's just such a factor of, like, expectations, right? Like, just what you think they can be and what you think you deserve, like, the Leafs went through dark years and fans were patient throughout all that. And this was supposed to be it. They're supposed to have arrived. Like, they were bad enough that they got great draft picks and those draft picks, you know, got older. They're not rookies. This is it. So right now is when the fruits of the tree are, you know, supposed to bear these beautiful fruits and it's just rotten. It feels rotten to the core right now. And there's no easy fix. You know, the easy fix seems to be everyone just saying, we'll fire the coach. But, you know, when you sit down and pick this team apart, haven't really got goaltending. You've got no backup goaltending. Your power play and your penalty kill are disastrous. The last little bit, they've been the worst. You know, the power play has been one of the worst in the league. So, you know, that's not necessarily all Babs. There's a couple of new assistant coaches that have come in to run those. There's no easy fix. And it seems like people are just like, well, fire the coach because that's the thing to do. And maybe it is the right answer. But it's not for sure the easy, obvious thing to me.
Let's come back to the complications around firing the coach. And that would be a significant development, certainly around the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're going to get a little bit deeper into the Maple Leafs here in a couple of seconds. Fast five, though. Five things that cut our eyeballs over the weekend. And the first one, we've already winked at it, talked about it, spent valuable airtime on radio and television so far, Anthony Stewart. The Leafs lose back-to-back games, losing streak at five. No quick fix here, is there?
No, there's not. And a tough night for the rookie goalie Kaskasuo, who let in six goals on 38 shots. But we're talking about defensive liabilities here. Right now, Tyson Barrie, he was at minus four on the night. So rough night for Tyson Barrie and the Leafs all around. So I don't know how to fix it, but there's some major changes needed.
You want to pick up on Tyson Barrie or leave that for the next segment?
Let's leave it because I think that needs some fleshing out, but definitely worth talking about. There's some major issue there on a very what should be a very important piece of their team. I'll just touch on the fact that I thought they played well on Friday against Boston. That wasn't, you know, the most popular opinion, but I thought they played well enough to win. This season has continually broke in the worst possible way for me for this team, and things would seem a whole lot different right now if they were 10-8 instead of 9-9, but it didn't. They're 9-9, got some work to do.
So sky is falling in Toronto. Out west, sky is falling as well. Calgary lose their third in a row, shutout in back-to-back games against the Coyotes, and last night, the Vegas Golden Knights. Six bagel. Who wants in first?
I'll take that one. Just it was bad again. I know I've been calling Calgary Leafs West a little bit. Like they have this similar thing in that they're talented. They have a coach who's, you know, of the Babcock tree, who is speaking out negatively about the group in the media. The goaltending looks rough. Their stars, a guy like Goodrow, people are talking about trying to trade him.
Trade all these players when at their lowest possible value.
Right. The
really
lot of really genius armchair GMs away. Out there. So, yeah,
he's Calgary's struggling because no one else knows.
Yeah, right. No one else has noticed this guy's having a slump. It's not going real well in Calgary either.
Flames.
Yeah, they're struggling offensively, and if you looked at the beginning of the season, you said near the quarter point mark that Goodrow and Monahan only have 10 goals between the two of them. I think you would say you're crazy. So Tkachuk has more same amount of goals as those two, but it's tough going Calgary right now, and they look to turn things around.
Now, how many of you guys, did you guys watch the Chicago-Buffalo game yesterday? Kirby Dach, I know it's early in his career, but was outstanding. Pair of goals yesterday for the now former Saskatoon Blade. I know every time I say that, as general manager Colin Priestner cringes. But the Blackhawks, a goal-scoring machine. They've now won four straight games, 21 goals in the process.
Yeah, and Patty Kane is back. I'm not sure if he left, but he's got a 9-game point streak. He has 17 points. He's got 5 goals, 4 assists in his last 4 games. So he's definitely helping turn things around in Chicago as they look to move up the standings there.
Who are they, Borny?
You know, they're a team with real talent that I think is playing a way that isn't sustainable for long-term success right now. You know, their coach, Jeremy Colliton, opened things up. You know, he didn't want to play this way, but he said, we're going to trade chances. We think we have enough talent to hang with a lot of teams. They're trading chances, they're getting saves, and they're scoring goals. I don't know if that's a great formula in the playoffs, but they're talented enough that it can win them some games right now. They needed a change. They made a change. They're winning some games. So good in the short term for their season and all that. I don't think that makes them any more of a threat for the Cup.
5-4 win over the Oilers on the weekend. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin leading the charge. Stars improve their record to 10-1-1 in their last 12 and are now, I think, what we thought they were going to be before the season, a force in the Central.
Yeah, great game by Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn last night after getting called up by the coach. So I don't know if that's a good thing, because now every month there might be a new headline, someone calling them out, maybe the person at the concession stand, but it's good for them. They're
the peanut vendors. Oh, nice.
They're definitely offensive juggernaut. Seguin just pushing the pace. Jamie Benn, I know he only has 2 goals, but he's a constant threat out there. So I called it for the beginning of the season for Dallas to be a competitor in that Central division. And as you can tell by their play of late, they're contenders.
I've had trouble trying to put my finger on what the Central is, because, you know, for a couple of years there, they were the best division in hockey. And then this year going into it, Minnesota was bad. Dallas was bad. There was a lot of question marks. Chicago was bad.
Yep.
But, you know, as we sit right now, you say, who's a playoff team in that division? St. Louis, Colorado, Winnipeg, Dallas, Chicago, Nashville? Like, which one? They're all pretty good. So
same as last season, and 3 from the Pacific get in.
Right. Yeah. So
is that where we're trending?
I think so. And you know, maybe 2 weeks ago, even we wouldn't have thought that. So it seems like things have normalized to, you know, our expectations for a lot of these teams.
Only 2 games tonight. We'll get your thoughts later on whether there should be any games on Hall of Fame night. But the Hockey Hall of Fame welcomes new members: Guy Carboneau, Sergei Zubov, Jim Rutherford, Haley Wickenheiser, Vaslav Nedimansky, and Jerry York. Jim Hewson, honored with the Foster Hewitt, Frank Brown with the Elmer Ferguson. I have a wide brush thought on the people going in tonight.
Yeah, it's great. We had the debate on who's a Hall of Famer or not. It comes back down to Pat Verbeek, but people mentioned
Guy. You love that one, don't you?
People mention Guy Carboneau, and they say, well, he only had 663 points in 1,300 games, but what stands out, he's a constant leader. He's got 3 Selke trophies, 3 Stanley Cup wins. So when you have that type of hardware, that's what pushes you over the top and gets you into the Hall of Fame.
I'm fine with Carboneau as long as we have the discussion about putting defensive defensemen in the Hall as well. Adam Foote, I'm looking your direction.
Yeah. Well, listen, we had that talk last week, and I think you're onto something there. Just because they don't have numbers that we can hold up to say, look how good they were, doesn't mean they weren't good. So I think this...
But yeah, if we're going to parse what a forward does, and it's a defensive specialist, shot suppression.
Like who?
Okay, well, do the... Adam Foote. Adam Foote is my guy from this
cog
from
of those
generation.
Colorado teams.
100%.
Yeah. So I think this group is actually a good representative sample of what helps you win hockey games. It's not just, here are guys with big numbers. It's a guy like Carboneau who contributed in other ways, and Zubov who's in the shadow in a way of some bigger name defenseman.
But if you look at points per game, Zubov's up there amongst the best.
He is.
Like if you go to points per game. Like
but he also has 600 assists. Right, so 600 assists as a D-man, that's amazing.
Ooh-wee. Yeah, but great. And then, you know, Nedimansky representing, you know, something bigger for hockey internationally. And obviously Haley Wickenheiser being, you know, one of the greatest hockey players ever, period, on that set.
And Jim Rutherford, Jerry York go in as well. And you know what? Good on Jerry York for coaching this weekend. I love that. This is what I do. I'm going to get to the Hall of Fame.
Come on.
Really?
Yeah. No, I mean.
Really? Okay, this will be good.
Yeah, I.
Let's tell people what to do with their lives. Go ahead.
Well,
I'm Justin
Bourne. No. See, I just think the greatest honor in your entire career is this Hockey Hall of Fame weekend. I think it's just another college hockey game, isn't it?
But that's part of the reason that got him there, that he's selfless. He cares more about his team than himself, the individual accolades.
I guess what this speaks to is I am not nearly that
selfless. That means he doesn't have a good at that. Well, maybe he's not selfless because maybe assistant coach isn't good enough to take over the reins while he's gone.
A little bit later on, I want to talk about the Matt Calvert situation that we saw on Saturday, which was horrific. Yeah. And all the issues that fall out of that. In the meantime... Geez, I don't know whether to start with the coach or start with the defenseman. The coach might be the sexier topic right now. Mike Babcock, and the hue and cry around Toronto is, the remedy here is as simple as a coaching change. Is it, Justin Bourne?
Well, I don't know that it's... I think they would be better, you know, very possibly with Sheldon Keefe. I'll just say that. I think it's possible that in the short term...
So we assume that it would be Sheldon Keefe and not just Dave Haxtell sliding over.
No, see, here's why I think that. I believe that Kyle Dubas has built this roster the way he wants it built. And I believe that in order to operate that machine, you need the right driver. And he's said for his previous machines that he's built in Sault Ste. Marie and with the Marlies that Sheldon Keefe is the guy to drive his teams. And he's driven them both successfully. So I do believe it would be Keefe. I do think that Keefe might be able to have this team playing a little bit better for now. I think that's possible. But I don't think it's as simple as that. I think Mike Babcock is a big personality in the history of hockey. You know, you look at his career and, you know, what he has done.
We just talked about the Hockey Hall of Fame, and he's going.
Yeah, well, exactly. And his contract is for years to come. I know the
money's
not
a big
thing.
Majority of that's been paid.
Sure.
Not that that's a factor down on Bay Street, but...
No, you're right. It's not. But I do think that you don't want to put the new coach, were you to fire him, in a position where you're handing him a mess. And you're not putting him in a position to succeed. What do you mean? You drop him into four more games on a road trip and they don't have Mitch Marner, Trevor Moore, or Alexander Kerfoot and say, fix it? Like, that's not putting the next guy in a position to succeed. I think you give Babs the chance to see if they can sort this thing out.
Just on the road?
Nah, I personally think longer. I think that, you know, this 20 games has not been a representative sample. Until they're fully healthy and we see what they are, they're really tough to judge. And I think Kyle wants to see them healthy before he makes a move.
Just trying to hear if there's anyone from Boston or Pittsburgh who's agreeing with anything about that Justin Bourne is saying.
No.
But injuries are just a reality. Like, I understand the point. Like, okay, who are they? Got to see what they're like when they're all healthy, and that is a team. But still, you know this. Some realities are just something that teams deal with. And that's just part of being a pro hockey player and running a pro hockey team. Injuries are a reality.
Injury is a big part of... you know, the day-to-day life of the NHL. I believe if they were going to make a change at coaching, they were going to do it in the offseason. So I think, you know, say what you want about Dubas. He's a very smart, calculated, you know, executive. He's not going to be making moves just because it's the right, you know, it's a thing to do at the time. So I think the succession plan is to get Sheldon Keefe in here. But as Justin mentioned, you can't do it now because it's just going to make a bigger mess. And what Dubas doesn't want, he doesn't want the microscope now shifting to him. So he's got to stay, you know, two steps away from the mess. And I think firing Babcock right now puts him one step closer to, you know, the microscope shifting to him. But
that's a bully in your tier. That's what happens when a general manager takes over a team and the first thing they say is, I'm going to need some time to see what we have under the hood here to get a real good...
From the coaching standpoint...
You're buying yourself a year.
Yeah, from the coaching standpoint... the way that this team is playing, I think it has to be directed at the coach. When you say, when you have to come out in front of the media saying, well, we're not starting on time, we're taking bad hooking, tripping, sticking penalties, and they're not responding in the right way and nothing's changing, that shows that they're tuning you out, or they're not listening, or they don't care, or you don't really mean it. So this team is too talented. They have too many offensive weapons to be where they are right now in the standings, and a change is needed. So whether that's a trade, whether that's a scratch, whether that's taking someone off the power play, something has to give here. And this team right now is the definition of insanity, where they're doing the exact same thing every night. Every night they're letting in, you know, one of the first shots of the net, on net. They're letting in a goal at the beginning of the period, the first minute of a period. I want someone to go and take a look at all the goals that they've let in when there's a 19 on the clock, please. When there's 19 something, or they let in a goal while they're announcing another goal. It would blow your mind. It would blow your mind. So something has to change. A 6-1 game, that's a perfect time to, you know, try a different power play unit, time to maybe bench somebody, maybe time to give Justin Hall, who's going in on breakaways, maybe give him some more minutes, bump him up there to see what he can do. But it's just the status quo with this team. And what happens now, that status quo, when it goes in December and January and the team's sitting out of the playoffs like it is now, it's going to be too late.
To Stewie's point, and it's a good one, at what point does following, and you know, the buzzword is the process, at what point does the process bleed into what Stewie is talking about, which is, this is not the process anymore. This is what Einstein talked about, the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
Because the process is keep doing these things and eventually mm-hmm. things will correct. Yeah. Right? Like we started to see, you know, Vegas start to correct against. I mean, we've seen teams come out of it. Okay. Yeah. We've seen teams go into slumps when the process just allows itself to play out. At what point does the process become what Einstein talked about?
We're there. The point's now. Yeah. Like we're at the point where You do need change. I just think that it doesn't need, we don't need to hit the big red button just yet. Because first off, the power play, as I mentioned earlier, it's garbage. It's been really bad. And that no
What's
one,
the problem with it? Like you're a video coach. Yeah. You worked for the Toronto, you've worked professionally.
Yes.
What is, I mean, one of the things that has been written about is they're not getting the puck to John Tavares enough.
Right.
Is that one of the things?
Certainly it is. Last year, he led the Toronto Maple Leafs in shots on the power play. First, most shots, John Tavares, he's amazing around the blue paint. He scores from about 4 feet from the net all the time. He has 5 shots on the power play this season. You know who has 6? Jason Spezza. Like, that's not a saying. Play Spezza more. That's saying Tavares is not getting involved enough on the power play. You know who shoots the puck the second most on the Leafs in the power play? Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner can't shoot the puck. I don't want Mitch shooting the puck. I want him on the half wall looking guys off and getting other guys open. I just think they're torn right now between two things. And one is that they have so much talent that those guys kind of want to do what they want to do, right? And be creative. And I think that's what the fan base wants to hear me say. I believe that power plays are best in a rigid structure. When you have guys that have a role and they play that role, and I don't care if you're, I mean, do you disagree with that?
No. I'm just trying to think of just remembering a comment that someone made to Elliot and I at the media avails in Chicago from the Florida Panthers organization. And we asked, you know, Paul McFarland has left Florida. He's now with the Toronto Maple Leafs, going to run the power play. What should we expect it to look like? And the first statement back was, well, Paul always loved a lot of shots from the point. And the one thing that we know about Mike Babcock is he doesn't like a lot of shots from the point. Now, it was wildly successful in Florida, right? Number 2 power play in the NHL right behind Tampa. That worked there. That doesn't happen here.
No.
There isn't the shot from the point. And I can hear anyone who has a casual glance at analytics says, it's the lowest percentage shot you're going to take. Why are you bothering with it?
Yeah. Well, like Nashville for years had those amazing defensemen. They were the last guys, or nearly the last team, to stick with a 2-3. Two defensemen up high, bombing it on the power play.
Yeah.
And they didn't have good power plays. That's great that they're great players and they can shoot it. It wasn't effective. And Morgan Riley is a fantastic hockey player.
Hey, why did it work in Florida?
Yeah, I mean,
second highest power play in the NHL.
Keith Yandel's probably it. Keith Yandel is a guy who can see it from up there.
Yeah, but Subban, Ellis, Yossi.
Yeah, no, you're right.
But how many
no,
times have you seen the Leafs, when they get the shot off, it misses the net, and the other team clears it in their back, you know,
winning getting pucks that back puck. Is obviously huge.
So they're not a really good team on retrieving pucks. You watch the Tampa Bay Lightning. We talked about it last year, that they're amazing at getting those pucks. And it's tough to get Tavares the puck when you're running your power play from the flanks. And usually the puck has to go from the point man to the line into the middle. It's very, very difficult to run your power play through the bump man in the middle. It's tough because there's lots of guys converging on you to try to take that lane away. Mm-hmm. It's a tough play. So especially now when you're running it from up top and not down low, where you're having trouble getting pucks anyways, it's just not working. So when I'm running a power play and it's not working, you go back to the basics. You go D to D, back to D, you fire it second and third opportunities. But with this power play now, they're not doing a good enough job getting the puck, retrieving pucks, winning those puck battles to get those second and third opportunities.
We just saw the Vegas Golden Knights take apart the Calgary Flames mm-hmm. on Hometown Hockey yesterday. They picked them apart. Like, it was clinical what Vegas was able to do to Calgary. I understand Calgary's struggling, but so are Toronto. And that's up next for the Vegas Golden Knights. Players before, and you guys can talk with authority on this, players before have talked about how road trips, extended road trips, are actually good for a team because you're just forced to deal with each other and you're around one another. You're done practice at Scotiabank down the street and it's 23 Ubers for 23 guys at the end of practice and you're not talking to anybody, you're calling your agent. And that's it. That's, you know, the person you talk to on the way back home. Yeah. Do we expect anything other than what we just saw last night for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I can't see William Karlsson snapping it in.
You have Ryan Reeves doing whatever he wants out there. Yeah. You have easy entries, simple exits. Marc-Andre Fleury.
I just cannot believe that this group of Leafs players could go out with and put forth another effort like we saw on Saturday. Like, I just don't believe any group of 20 people can go out there and not, like, be a little embarrassed and appreciate the fresh start and show a little better. They had a day off in Vegas yesterday. Nylander's, you know, his Instagram stories are on the golf course. Him and Kapanen are playing out in 20-some degree heat. It's, you know, it has to be a new game, a better feel. I mean, if they go in there and get steamrolled by Vegas too. By the way, I think time off on the road is great with your team when things are going well. Otherwise, you just end up cursing everyone and getting more divisive and saying more negative things about each other.
Well, I think this team is due for a team camaraderie trip. So a trip like this can help turn around the season. We saw some other teams go overseas and come back and they struggled for a bit. Then once they came back, they started doing very, very well. So
you wouldn't be talking about Philadelphia, would you?
Maybe not.
14-game point streak or whatever it is. Yeah.
But, you know, I think they need to get out, start playing some card games. They need to go have a couple root beers on the road. This trip, I think, can make or break the season. I think if they get out, they start becoming a cohesive unit, they get a couple points on this road trip, I think it can help turn around the season. Or they can say, you know what, I'm going to my room, turning off the lights, see you in the morning situation. I think that could ruin the season.
Okay. So cheer up, Maple Leafs
fans.
Go
Leafs, go.
We'll take a break. We'll come back and have a little tour around the NHL. Let's park some time and talk about the late game on Hockey Night on Saturday, and that was the Vancouver Canucks and the Colorado Avalanche. And we'll talk about this. Adam Gaudette looked fantastic again, but the hot-button issue coming out of that one is the Matt Calvert situation. That is up next as Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto, Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, yours truly. Here Monday to Friday, noon to 2. There was we have so much to get into today. Okay, let's go back to Saturday. And let's go back to the late game. And let's go back to after hours as well. And let's go back to a little bit before that with the Vancouver Canucks tying the game after Matt Calvert takes a puck to the head and goes down and stays down. And right away, Elias Pettersson recognizes it and looks more than just concerned, but I don't know the right word to use.
Yeah.
But Pettersson looks really concerned at that moment. The play continues. Vancouver scores. Vancouver salvages a point in the game. Colorado ends up winning. You looked at Matt Calvert, and we've seen Matt Calvert dive in front of shots. We've seen head injury Matt Calvert. We've seen guy that scores three shorthanded goals for the Brandon Wheat Kings, Matt Calvert. We've seen Brandon Calvert do a lot of things. And usually in the sentence when you describe Matt Calvert, the word guts comes up. And that was Matt Calvert with his face in front of a shot, and he got hit in the side of the head and went down. There's no whistle on the play. The rule goes, unless it's ruled that a player is in significant distress, and that sentence does a lot of work here on the Saturday nights, the play can't stop until possession changes. Before we get your thoughts, let's hear from a couple players on the Avalanche. We're going to hear from Nathan MacKinnon, but first here's Eric Johnson on the referees not blowing the whistle for Matt Calvert's injury.
I've talked about it already. Like, you want to protect a guy? The guy's got a family at home. He's laying there bleeding out of his head, and they don't blow the f***ing whistle. It's a complete joke. It's an absolute joke. They should be ashamed of themselves.
I mean, so when you see this kind of stuff, I mean, what, is there a need to go lobby to the NHL? I mean, do you guys have that sort of power to, say, change the rule, or what is the discussion?
What if he laid there and died on the ice? To let an offensive zone play continue? Complete joke. It needs to change. If it was one of their guys, I'd expect the same thing.
Final thing, and this will be it on this matter. When you kind of just look at, like, again, what you saw Nikita go through, what you see Matt go through, I mean, just how much more does something like this kind of hit home, or would it even matter if it was your teammates?
No, I think it obviously hits home more and it's your teammate, but it's like, come on. This is twice now. It's bigger than the game. This is your life. He got hit in the head and he's bleeding out of his head. Like, let's use some common sense here and blow the damn whistle.
Okay, that's Eric Johnson. And you could tell he's emotional, and a lot of Avalanche players were. I would make the point, too, that I'm sure a lot of Vancouver Canucks players and fans were as well. Let's hear from Nathan MacKinnon, who was on After Hours this week, on the same situation.
Nathan, the guest says you got somewhere to go tonight because you looked like you weren't intent on having that overtime go any more than 30 or 40 seconds.
Yeah, Rick, I mean, it's tough letting them tie it up. I think we're all pretty determined. We wanted to end that quickly, you know. That rule is pretty crazy. A guy laying there, bleeding out to the side of his head. I can only imagine if that was LeBron James and his head was bleeding, and they let the other team either take a 3-point to tie up the game. I know it's not the ref's fault; it's the league rule. I think you got to look and see who's laying on the ice. Matt Calvert, one of the toughest guys I've ever played with, and I don't think he's faking it. Try to get a whistle.
All right, Stewie, NHLer, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm glad. I hope he's okay. I haven't heard any reports on, you know, his status. But you hate to see a guy laying on the ice injured, and especially when it's a tough guy that, you know, is a warrior for his team.
I had the same feeling when I saw Ian LaPerriere dive in front of a Paul Martin shot.
Yeah, get in the face. Yeah, so I think the refs drop the ball on this one here. And you could tell by those comments that everyone's very emotional, because that could be anybody. That could be Crosby. That could be Malkin. And it shouldn't matter who it is. But in an instance like that, I know there's implications, you know, in the game. It's a close game. It's a 2-goal game at that time, but you have to blow it down. Player safety has to be paramount. It has to be number one on the list. And that's a situation where, you know, one of the four refs have to blow it down. It shouldn't be a call by the head ref.
I don't know.
Blow it down.
I don't know, person. I've sent I sent a text out a second ago to an NHL official, just waiting to hear back. I don't know whether linesmen are allowed to make that call, or it could only be Garrett Rank or Justin St. Pierre in that situation.
But if that's the rule, you should give them the authority, because maybe they have a vantage point where, hey, I can actually see blood dripping from his head. And
well, look at Pettersson's reaction away.
Yeah, and hockey players are notoriously tough. I'm sure you remember Gregory Campbell blocking two shots with the
breaking
broken
leg.
So guys necessarily aren't laying there, especially right in the danger zone, knowing that you can get hit with a puck. So if he's laying there, he's actually hurt. So you have to blow it down. And I'm thinking, what would Jeff Merrick do to change this rule? I'm going a little bit lunatic fringe here and say maybe the coaches have a flag that they can call. They can call a timeout mid-play. Ooh. So maybe that's an instance where you can throw a flag on the ice, they blow it down, and you can help, you know, you can come get a guy off the ice. So maybe that's a little bit too lunatic fringe.
I don't know about that one.
I've got the.
I'm not sure about that one.
Or why not have a spotter up? If there's a spotter up that can maybe, you know, signal to the ref, hey, you got to blow this down, because they're seeing every single angle, they're watching from many different TVs. That's an instance where, hey, you know what, we have to blow it down. And I'm sure the Canucks, if they're in the same boat, would want that blown
down.
Here's
the thing, this situation to me doesn't need a spotter, because this is with the puck. This isn't something behind the play that a couple of referees have missed and it happened between a defenseman and a winger on the back. Like, this isn't that. This is follow the puck into Matt Calvert's head. Yeah,
but if this is 1985 or 95, I think that player gives the puck to the other team so they can actually blow it down. So I think there's that respect factor. But Pettersson, obviously, you don't really know what to do and you can't really prepare for that situation. So I'm sure he was in shock too, but I think it's the responsibility to the league.
Players do think about this. Like, you guys have thought, okay, what do we do with someone in? I know.
Yeah, but if I'm a fourth line guy and I have a shot to take that, you know, a lane to take that shot, and I give the puck away,
I want to pick up on that. Yeah. That's an interesting idea. Yeah. I want to pick up on that in a couple of seconds. But Justin, your thoughts on what we saw on Saturday?
Well, I mean, I'm with you guys 100% that it's a concern and something needs to be done. But, you know, I'll just go ahead and play the devil's advocate that your boy Elliot Friedman often says with the unintended consequences thing. Yeah. You know, if everyone can blow it down anytime someone looks like they're in significant distress, I mean, it's just so subjective, like how, and personally, and so everyone is upset that he, you know, Matt Calvert is bleeding out of his head. They should have blown the whistle. To me, if the refs had that information, a whistle's getting blown. I didn't see him bleeding. Like, you know, when you just looked, you were watching it happen quick. I didn't see blood. A guy got hit. I wasn't sure where it hit him.
But when he stands up and collapses.
Yes. I'm like, all right, now let's blow this thing dead. I think the refs probably were like.
But initially when the puck hits the head.
Were you sure it hit its head?
His head was right in front of Pettersson. The shot's fired. Hits him in the side of the head.
I just feel like it's.
I get that it's a fast game, but.
It's a fast game and like. You know, so if a guy gets hit in the neck and he isn't up, I just think it's really hard to say, blow it down when a guy looks hurt after blocking shots because it hurts. With all the information, it's really easy to say they should have blown it down.
Of course.
We're watching the game.
This on Monday afternoon.
Yes.
I know. I get that. I understand that. One of the, and you can understand why Avalanche players are hot about it. The question that I would ask of any Avalanche player is if it were, I don't know, pick a JT Miller, okay, who blocked a shot with his head and the Avs started playing Globetrotter with the puck and tick, 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 and they're about to score, should they pass it to a Vancouver player?
I like that idea because we see that in soccer, right?
And you see it in minor hockey. Would you pass the puck to the Vancouver player to end it? Like, the follow-up to Eric Johnson is, well, what would you have done if you were a Vancouver player in that situation? Mm-hmm. Would you have given up that scoring opportunity to tie that game? Because you're right, that does happen in soccer. Stu, I'm not sure if any of your minor hockey teams are instructed when there's a player in duress and it's missed the goal. We had a situation with our minor hockey team on the weekend where a player caught one in the upper chest and he went down and lay down there for about, like, he was in like significant pain. He's a 9-year-old. And it took about 20 seconds or 30 seconds for us to get possession back. And then the whistle went. And you can imagine what parents, specifically that kid's parents.
Yeah.
We're going through at that moment.
Right.
So if you're, I don't know if your team's instructed or if you've talked to your kids, but if you see that situation, referees have the whistles in the pocket, do you surrender possession? And then if so, if it happens at the NHL level, let's say Elias Pettersson gets that puck back. He's just seen what happened to Matt Calvert and he hands the puck to an Avs player to get the whistle. What's the conversation we're having today?
Yeah, play to the whistle.
What's the conversation they're having in Vancouver?
$1 million industry.
What's the conversation we're having
if Vancouver misses the playoffs by 1 point? And that's a crucial point, right? So in the third period, in the last two minutes of a third period, it's very tough to say what should you do, because you want to win the game. So I think you got to take the onus and put it on the refs and the officiating and the officials and the rule makers. That's something where there's four of them on the ice. There's still four refs, right? I'm going by minor hockey. Minor hockey, there's three.
Two,
I don't know.
Two refs and two linesmen. I'm not sure they
one of them have to call it down. So
if the main official only has, because the players can't end that play, right? If you're the Vancouver Canucks, you can flip it over the glass.
But
you
if
can
this,
say this is more and important
and me personally,
than the
if
game.
If I'm Pettersson and I'm on the Vancouver Canucks, it's the third period. Competition's high. I'm trying to score a goal. Sorry.
And that's why I would go back to anyone on the Avalanche. We just heard from Eric Johnson and Nathan MacKinnon, who are hot about it, and rightfully so. And I understand where that comes from. But the follow-up, I think, in that situation is, well, what would you have done? Mm-hmm. If those officials in your mind aren't doing their job, what would you have done?
Just the way the play unfolded, it would have been really hard for those players on the other team to know what was happening with Matt Calvert, to know that he's bleeding out of the head or, you know, I feel really confident in myself taking the opinion, just let him bleed and keep playing here. It's a terrible thing to say, but I just think
you sound like Drago.
It's more.
if he dies.
But it's a very complicated situation. I agree with you that if there's a way that we can do this league-wide to mandate, you know, everyone has the power to blow the whistle when they deem it, you know, justified, I'd be fine with that.
And I'm not worried about people now faking injuries, because just like with the diving penalties, they have a database of guys that are notorious for diving. So this is a situation where, hey, if you're worried about guys faking injuries, that's a bad omen. And if I'm a teammate and I see my guy faking injuries, I'm going to be like, dude, don't do that. That's bad.
Whoa, that's bad.
Whoa. Guys get called out for sure.
How many times do you think in the course of just a week, a player who gets hit with an elbow in the head or hit from behind the boards lies on the ice until the trainer comes out and says these words?
I'm fine.
Do we have the five yet? Stewie, look at me, bud.
Not too often.
Look at me in the eyes. And you tell me that. No, you can't even look at me.
But I'm looking. Calvert's obviously not looking around, but you'll see when a guy gets pegged, his first reaction is, if he's actually not hurt, he looks for the call, right? So this is an instance where he's down and out for the count.
He's definitely hurt. Yeah. That's a tough one. But, Jeff, that is a thing. And that's a real thing that people do is embellish calls. And if suddenly I can stop the play in the dying minutes up a goal somehow, I don't know. It's a risk. Unintended consequences. I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Thankfully, it wasn't as bad as it could have been
for
Matt Calvert. But again, like as a pat on the back for Matt Calvert, was anybody surprised that Matt Calvert did that?
No.
Like when you look at hockey player, like nails guys, it's Matt Calvert.
Yeah.
Going away. He's like bandaged up like a Civil War soldier and getting back out there on the ice.
I blame the guy who invented shot blocking on this. Invented the shot block.
Listen, you don't have to listen to that guy, whoever he is. I know that from experience.
I don't know if
John Shot Blockington.
I don't know if I don't know if Craig Ludwig invented it, but one of his teammates is going into the Hockey Hall of Fame tonight. Mm-hmm. And that's Guy Carbon. Let's talk about some of the Hall of Famers here as we carry on. Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto, simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program, Hockey Central, on the air Monday to Friday, noon to 2. Thank you so much for joining us. A little bit later on this evening at Young and Front, the entire hockey world outside of the two games on the go around the NHL this evening will be on the Hockey Hall of Fame as Sergei Zubov, Guy Carbonneau, Jim Rutherford, Haley Wickenheiser, Vaslav Nedimansky, and Jerry York officially become members of the 2019 class. All deserving, all worthy. Who pops for you, Anthony Stewart?
For me, it's Jim Rutherford, and I just want to speak on Jim Rutherford, the person and executive. He was the GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, and he signed me to a two-year deal. And what I respected about him, there was no gray area. You knew where you stood, black or white. So there wasn't any, hey, I wonder, you know, what's going on today. When you were not doing well, he was sure to call you in. And when you were doing well, he was very well to, give you positive feedback. So I ended up having my son in North Carolina, and the family and their family went above and beyond to give a great gift basket. And his wife was really, really nice to my family. But what stands out for me is him as an executive and a GM. He put me on waivers. He put me on waivers right before a road trip. And I actually cleared waivers, and I had a meeting with him right after. And, you know, I thought it was going to be, cut and dry meeting where he was going to say, hey, you know, don't worry about it. We'll keep plugging away. But he said, hey, how do you think you're doing? I'm like, I think I'm doing okay. Business as usual. And he looked at me and stopped me dead in my tracks and said, nope, it's not business as usual. You need to play better. And we're pretty cash strapped, but we need you to play better. If not, you're going to have to go down to the minors. So I respected that. It wasn't any, messaging, broken telephone through my agent. He talked to me directly. He He wasn't hiding from the situation. So I respected him as an executive and as a man because he came to me, didn't talk to my agent, didn't talk to the coach, talked to me directly and told me exactly what he expected.
Isn't that what players want at the
Absolutely.
End of it? Just be honest with me. I'm a big boy. I've heard everything about that. I've always maintained. By the time you get to the NHL, you've heard everything about, like, even someone like John Tavares, right? Exceptional, gets an exceptional status to get to the OHL. By the time he's done with the OHL and into the NHL, he has heard every criticism. And he's an elite player. First overall pick, right? Mm-hmm. You're a first round draft. You've heard everything about your game by the time you get to the NHL. So nothing should really hurt you or offend
nothing
you.
Nothing should, but if I may devil's advocate that, this is a different generation of player.
Well, I'm not saying now.
Okay.
I'm saying that legendary draft class of 2003.
And he's not afraid to make a move. He's made many big trades during the season. So you got to respect that. I think he's letting the league know, hey, I got a goalie available. So he's not afraid to do business. He's not afraid to make big splashes. He's not worried about egos or players. He's there to win a Stanley Cup. And as you can tell, he's one of the best at doing it.
And you think of his 2006 Stanley Cup run with the Carolina Hurricanes, where everybody else took the time and waited the trade deadline and then bid against everybody else. Jimmy said, screw that. The sooner I can get someone into my program, the better we will be. And they won a Stanley Cup that year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's yours?
Mine's Haley Wickenheiser. I feel like I've watched her forever. Like, you know, I am of the age, you know, I turn 37 December here, and I saw Tiger Woods' whole career. As long as I can remember watching sports, Tiger Woods has been a relevant figure. Mm-hmm. Haley Wickenheiser has been that just in hockey. She's been decades of excellence. And, you know, the other day hearing that she's, you know, almost a doctor and, you know.
How do you feel about your life?
I saw the other day she's like 40. It's like, my God, the accomplishments this woman has had over her career and unapologetic work ethic. You know, just you talked about her wearing that shirt at the gym on days I'm not working out, someone else is. And she's lived her life like that. Like, she just is a go-getter and doesn't stop and has tried to be anything but the best. And hey, guess what? She is.
You can make the argument. And even, I even hate couching it by saying you can make the argument because I think she just is the best female hockey player ever.
Yeah. I certainly think so. In terms of what she's meant to growing the women's game, you know, awareness of hockey is like if you talk about women's hockey to someone and give them a name, they'll know it's hers by a mile. It's, you know, hers that I think younger girls probably aspired to be more than anyone else. She's just been the you know, she's been not just a pioneer for women's hockey. She's just been a huge figure in hockey.
Absolutely. Glad to see Nedimansky going as well. You talked off the top about, you know, what he represented internationally. And one of the things that fans like to talk about is, oh, these two teams hate each other. Oh, these two guys hate each other. Oh, 72, man, that was hatred. Oh, Canada versus Soviet Union. Oh, that was their system versus ours. There was intense hatred there. Nothing. Nothing. Like Czechoslovakia and the Soviet Union. And players like Jan Suchy, Bobby Holík's father was also on that team, and Vaslav Nedimansky was right there in the middle of all of it. This is after the tanks rolled in down the cobblestone streets of Prague, 1969 World Championships in Stockholm. Czechoslovakia beats the Soviet Union twice, 2-0 and 4-2, in a game that had a layer of hatred the likes of which the game has never seen. You can talk all about how the Battle of the Keystone State and the Battle of the Hudson and the Battle of Alberta. And, oh, remember those Nordiques, Montreal Canadiens games that took 4 hours?
Pia Stanley Puncho.
Yeah, that one as well in 87. Nothing. Nothing approaches. Well,
sports were political events, you know, for years and years.
There were riots in Czechoslovakia after that game as fans took to the streets to celebrate in their occupied city.
Right. That's insanity.
That is next level stuff. Good to see Nedimansky and a celebration of that family. Guy Carbonneau, Sergei Zubov, and Jerry York go in as well. I mentioned Jim Houston, winner of the Faustin Hewitt, Frank Brown, Lindsay Elmer Ferguson. We come back. Hour two of Hockey Central is on the horizon. Reset the Maple Leafs situation and have a little tour around the NHL from a Canadian team's point of view now that we have hit the quarter mark of the season. We're back in a moment on Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto, Sportsnet and the NHL Network. Keep it here.
This Central with Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Hour two of Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Plenty to get to. More on the Hall of Fame. A little tour around the Canadian teams, as we are now a quarter of the way through the season. A couple of different things in Leafland. And I'm sure you have your own questions as well. Want to play a couple of clips here. One of them, Brian Burke, who was on leadoff this morning on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, talking about, you know, the issue that's burned really even going back to last spring and bled into the summer. And the speculation about, well, let's see what Mike Babcock does in the first 20 games. And now the conversation has fired up again, coming off a pair of losses Friday night and specifically Saturday, which was a brutal one for the Toronto Maple Leafs on Hockey Night in Canada. Here's Brian Burke on the potential of firing Mike Babcock.
Feels like we've been asking you about Mike Babcock for weeks now. It becomes ad nauseum at some point, but we watched you on Hockey Night in Canada after the loss on Saturday night, and correct me if I'm wrong, it felt like you may have had a pivot in your opinion on the situation involving Babcock and the Leafs and where things are at.
Yeah, I think they've got I think it's time to start questioning what's happening here. But when you fire a coach, it's easy to say fire the coach, right? We did a board, and this is last year, right about this time, is when the coaches started getting canned, right? So Mike Yeo went, Quenneville went. So this is when teams start looking at those type of changes. But when you fire a coach, it's really an organizational failure. I mean, the players, I think, are getting a free ride here, and it drives me nuts. I mean, I think the players should be embarrassed the way they played in front of that young goaltender the other night. That's garbage. And that's where the blame should go, but you can't blame all 20 players, so it ends up on the coach. I think what people are overlooking in this market is they switched out the two assistant coaches last summer, which is what you do when you're trying to save a head coach. I did it for Ronnie Wilson before I had to move him out. I brought in two new assistant coaches. They do this in the NFL all the time. They want to save the head coach, they fire the offensive coordinator. So they've already taken one dramatic step to prolong this coach's life. It hasn't had any positive impact. So that's number one. Number two, unlike most midseason firings where you've got to replace the guy, okay, fire the coach. That's plan A. What's plan B? Who's going to coach your team? They've got the guy they want sitting and waiting in the wings. So that's a very atypical situation. So to me, I would not be surprised if they're not looking hard at that. But again, to be fair to Mike, I think there's some real roster structure issues here and backup goalie and stuff that's right on the GM.
The backup goalie is the interesting one, and many people have pointed to that and have said, well, if it's a backup goaltender issue, why doesn't Frederik Andersen play back-to-back games? We'll pause on that, though. Justin, your thoughts on what we just heard from Brian Burke on The Morning Show?
I think he makes some really good points. You know, the best of which, I think, is just that they have taken all these steps they can to protect Babcock, you know, firing the assistant coaches, which they definitely didn't fire. Those guys moved on. Wink, wink.
nudge.
Yeah, they found somewhere else to go. But they helped him out there. But they're also in that unique spot that they have Sheldon Keefe. I do think that who Mike Babcock is, you know, we talked about, plays a big part in that he's a difficult man to fire. This is a big statement from a young general manager who, you know, this isn't something you do willy-nilly because you want to change. You really need to flesh this out and assess what difference is it going to make and is it necessary? And it's definitely getting to the point where the answer to those questions might be yes.
I think he's right. I think he's right just based on the fact that it's tough to make that move mid-season unless the guy that you're bringing in is 100% set up to do the job. So I think if you're making this move now thinking that it's going to bump your team up to first place and you're going to have a chance to win the Stanley Cup like Pittsburgh did and teams have done in the past, yeah, make the move. But Dubas is more calculated. I think he's looking more long-term, and I don't think he's going to make that move mid-season. Mm-hmm. So I think he made that decision based on the summer. Hey, I'm either going to make the move now in the summer to promote Keefe, or you know what? We're going to see what Babcock can do. So,
but isn't that based on the assumption this team would be fine and would make the playoffs? And there'd be something to judge
but
on?
Let's look at this roster. Right now, do you think they're not going to make the playoffs? They're going to make the playoffs.
I think so. I don't know
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
That is a different sentiment than so the beginning of the
season. So I'm not sticking up for Babcock, but I think based on whether or not you agree with the way the roster is constructed, you have to do your best to coach this team to its strengths, and you have to outcoach its weaknesses. So we're looking at, you know, the New York Islanders, not the most offensive team, but they have that structure, they have that system that makes them successful. So I think he's just relying on his old coaching ways to say, hey, this is how we have to do it. It's my way or the highway. So, you know, you look at guys that have been fired in the past, John Tortorella, who's admitted, hey, you know what, maybe I got to ease up a little bit. I got to change my coaching style. So I think Babcock's just stuck in his old ways, but with this group, the old ways aren't going to work. So I think it's a combination of the old ways not working and the younger guys saying, well, I'm making 11 sheets. I don't care what this guy has to say. He's probably going to be gone in the summertime anyway. So that's that on that.
Do you think players are willing, though, to just completely scotch a season? Like, guys, it's November.
Not quit, but you get in little clicks. You start chirping about the team. Like, I've had a player come up to me every single morning with his coffee and just, hey, what's going on with your boy today? What's going on with your boy?
And just your boy that was the coach?
Yeah.
By the way, so it would don't get players Matt Calverting in front of pucks.
Yeah, you just get that negativity. When you have that negativity where everyone's just, you know, behind the scenes, just miserable, complaining, that takes down the team morale, and it actually drags your team down. So you need to find ways to get motivated. And I put that on the leadership group, where you got to find a way to get wins. You got to find ways to step up despite not everyone believing in the coach.
Yeah, this is a fully entertaining time right now. As a fan of this, you know, if you're a Leafs fan watching what's happening here, this is high drama because something has to change, and there are no easy answers. So fun times.
And it's always worse when you get starched like that on Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah. that was a tough cherry on top, so to speak.
That is a tough one. Okay, the other issue, and we hinted at this in the first hour. We'll get to it now. This is part of Saturday Headlines, all right? So this is Elliot Friedman talking about the Tyson Barrie situation. Here's a headline. It hasn't worked out as intended so far. Here's Fried, Ron McLean, Chris Johnson on Headlines on Hockey Night in Canada, Saturday.
Now, the other name that's come up a lot this week has been Tyson Barrie. There's been a lot of chatter around him. He has not asked for a trade. However, I think there's an understanding that so far it hasn't worked, that this is a very important year for him because he's a free agent. I think we all recognize how he would feel about that. I'm hearing Toronto's received calls on him. Would you be wanting to move him? And so far they've rejected the idea. They don't want to trade him. But there is interest, and because Colorado's retaining half his salary, he's at 2.75. We'll see where it goes over the next month, but I do think there is a recognition that this can't continue for him.
You know, this might be an old school way to think about it, or this may be an old school model. Tougher to do, certainly in a salary cap era and in a salary cap situation like the Toronto Maple Leafs find themselves in, where they are capped out. But once upon a time, amongst general managers, Brian Burke will tell you about this, there was a feeling that before you fire a coach, you owe that coach a trade. You owe the coach a trade to jumpstart the team. If you look historically in the NHL, when firings are done, back up a little bit, and you'll see the general manager try to throw the coach a lifeline, something, jolt the team, get the team kickstarted a little bit. And then if that doesn't work, then you've been left with no recourse. How do you guys feel about the Tyson Barrie situation? And how do you feel about what Elliot's talking about here on the weekend on Headlines, that there have been teams that are calling, but right now the Maple Leafs are not interested in trading Tyson Barrie? Not to say that they won't, but as of right now, the interest isn't there.
Well, I think it's a precarious situation. You know, Tyson Barrie, coming off a 70-plus point season as a defenseman, came here and was, you know, put on the second power play unit, and he's living in Nazem Kadri's place, and, you know, the... It doesn't really feel like anyone went out of their way to accommodate Barrie or facilitate him having a big season in a contract year. And I think what's happening with Tyson Barrie is he's seeing the numbers he expected to get as an unrestricted free agent, which, you know, you could have said this summer you'd have guessed it'd be, what, $8 million a season, something like that. You can see a situation where he goes, you're killing my money. You're hurting my pocketbook now with this situation. And I don't know how long I can toil around trying to play your guys' way while I'm sacrificing my money. Mm-hmm. So I think there's frustration on Barry's end. I could see a situation where, you know, Elliot said the Leafs have taken calls on Tyson Barry, but there's no interest on their end. How long till the Barry camp says, make some calls on my end? The problem is he makes $2.75 million. You know, that helps in terms of what you're going to get back, but anyone any good that you want back is going to make more than that. So, the best case scenario is he just starts playing better, but they need to put him in a position to do that.
I'm Tyson Barry. I'm taking the Denny Lemieux approach. Trade me now. He's a Mustang, right? He's a Mustang. We know his shortcomings defensively, but the risk, the rewards outweigh the risk, where he's a high-octane offensive player. He can make plays. He can run your power play, and he could score 60-plus points a year. But something's not working now, where he only has 0 goals, 6 assists in the 22 games that he's played this year. And, you know, the explanation from the coach is saying, well, he's got to fall in line and find a way to, you know, to be a bigger part of this team. But if I'm Tyson Barry, you guys traded for me. So if you traded for me, you at least got to put me in a position to succeed, not tell me, hey, I got to fall in line and play this system and be getting 30 seconds of power play on the second unit. To get the most out of him, you should have brought him in here, have him be the QB for 15, 20 games. I'm telling you, he'd probably have a point a game. He'd be doing what Makar is doing right now in Colorado. He's that good offensively. But I think coupled with him not really getting the power play minutes, him getting some defensive lapses, it's creating a terrible season for him. So, and you mentioned before the expectations. He was talking about getting his $8 million per year. If he finishes the season with 5 goals and 25 points,
yeah,
see you later. Thanks for coming. You're going to be like Jake Gardner, where you're going to sign a 2-year, 3-year somewhere at a fraction of the cost. So if I'm Tyson Barry or the Leafs, I got to find a way to get this guy going, because he could be part of your long-term plans. But the way things are going, he's probably going to be on the first plane out of town.
Yeah, what's tough here is, like, if you were the Leafs going into this season and you wanted to put him in a position to succeed, what do you tell Morgan Riley off his, you know, Norris, top five in Norris voting and 70-plus point season? You're on the second power play unit?
Yeah.
You know, like, but at the same time, do you not trade for a guy because, you don't want to create that controversy? Like, it's sometimes guys have personal goals that don't align with the teams, and that really seems like a situation that's happened here.
But you're just delaying the inevitable now. Now you got to go and find another 3 defensemen for next year. And then what are you going to be saying at this point next year? Well, you know, we don't really have the chemistry. It's going to take some time. So you got to find guys to plug them in the system and get the most out of them.
I think, though, at the beginning of the season, everyone looked at this Maple Leafs back end and said they're going to lose at least 2, maybe 3 of those blue liners, yeah, which is why players like Travis Dermott become much more valuable. Rasmus Sandin becomes much more valuable, and although he's still there with the Marlies, maybe someone like Timothy Liljegren, but jury is still very much out there. Assessment now on the Maple Leafs back end. You mentioned Morgan Riley. This is not the same Morgan Riley we saw last season.
No, and it's just like every player in the Leafs looks about 10% worse to me. Like, there's not one player that I'm like, Morgan's terrible this year. Like, it's not quite where it was last year for me. And there's just a few more of those, what you would have deemed Jake Gardner-esque errors, you know, where you go, whoa, like a glaring, bad, tough to miss error that
errors that become gifts, which is what Jake Gardner specialized in, unfortunately. Yes. And the gift master over here to my right should know that.
But yeah, so he's definitely a guy that falls into line there. And I think, you know, if you're Babcock and you're owed a trade, all you're saying is get me a guy who can kill penalties, who is mad and competitive, and listen, I'm making a player up, a right shot, mad, angry defenseman who kills penalty and makes $3 million. Got one? Like, it's a unicorn. So
those guys, A, generally don't exist, and B, if they do, they're not.
They don't make three.
They're not. Then
which way did Polak go? Which way did Polak shoot?
But neither handed.
Okay. He didn't have a stick. I think the pressure from Riley having such a good season last year is sort of weighing on a bit. Everyone's talking about, well, he's going to be in the Norris discussion. So I think there was a bit of a hype machine. He's a really, really solid defenseman. He had 72 points last year for a reason. But I think now he's trying to do too much offensively, like everybody else. They're forgetting that D zone, that D side of the puck. And we saw it against Boston. He got walked by Marchand, where, Norris caliber defensemen don't really, they usually stop that play. So Riley, I think he just needs a solid pairing defenseman, someone to feed off of. Maybe he needs someone to stay back a little bit while he goes off to the races. But I think defensively, he's taken a step back. But that's the whole team, the whole team. And I that's not a personnel issue. I believe it's a systemic issue. I believe it's an X's and O's. And I think all around everyone's, you know, this is a symptom of every, you know, of the system.
In sports, you can sell two things. You can sell wins, or you can sell hope. Now, the everything I always wanted to know about Pierre Engvall, I learned on Justin Bourne's Twitter feed almost every day. Tell us about the Marley.
Well, listen, we're Pierre talking Engvall. About there needs to be a change. And so you go, you look at the AHL team and say, who can play? Well, Pierre Engvall, listen, I'd like to clarify. I don't think he's going to move the needle a ton for the Leafs. If and when you see
brought
him.
You brought him up a couple of different times as someone you think can contribute on this Maple Leafs team and maybe has outgrown the AHL.
Sure. Here's what he is. He's 6'3", at least. I think he's 6'3", 6'4". He's a horse. Like, he skates like the absolute wind. And when he gets the puck coming out of his own end on a breakout, he's nearly impossible to stop. He's got 5 goals in the last 3 games. He's starting to put up some numbers. He, you know, he's a winger they converted to be a centerman. He's someone who could bring in energy and excitement and just be a change for this team. I don't know how he is in terms of killing penalties or those sort of details, but I know that he's someone who could play slot into the NHL lineup and look, offer something different. Like, are the Leafs look so good, like we can't take Timoshov out for a game or Shore or Gauthier? I just think things have got to change a little bit here.
Short-term or long-term, the farm's not going to fix this. I think they have to make a blockbuster trade. They need to get a 1A or a 1B defenseman, and they need to move one of these forwards that's making big, big money. Ooh. I've said that last year. The other hosts are probably going to hate me. I think they need to trade William Nylander. I know you don't like that. Down to that. They need to make a big move. They have too much offense, not enough defense, not enough depth, not enough backup goaltending. So Nylander's the chip, but I think that can solve 90% of those problems. And long-term, they're not outscoring the problems. They got to find a way to address that issue.
When people in the media, just so everyone listening understands, when someone in the media in Toronto says they need to move one of the big guys up front, that's carny for they need to trade Nylander.
Yep, but I'm saying it directly. They need to trade with Nylander. Yeah, I love him.
I appreciate the directness on that. It's impossible to avoid the reality that he plays a style of game that is different from what the coach is preaching. And you know, there's a reason the coach holds up Zach Hyman and says, hey, look, everyone else on the roster at my favorite player on the team. Like, emulate this guy. Like, William Nylander could not be more polar opposite from Zach Hyman.
I just think that you do that at your own risk. Did you see him against Boston?
He's looked great lately. He's been one of their best players lately. That doesn't change the fact that maybe he's the chip they need to move, but I think he's been fantastic, and that Anthony and I would argue were we AGM and GM of a team about Nylander.
You want to make the case for Nylander as to who he makes it against?
Well, I just think right now, looking at this team, he's one of the few guys that seems to have found their game. You know, he's playing the way he looked like, you know, what you expected he could do. Last year was so disappointing, but this year he's... Yeah. Able to get separation from defenders. He's creating some offense. He's been a bright spot amidst a lot of darkness for this Leafs team right now. So I'm going to try
to use the chess analogy. I'm catching up on my chess. So we're putting this in chess. Tavares and Matthews are the king and queen. I think Nylander's the rook. He's going up and down the board. He's going side to side. He's getting some things done. But when it comes down to, you know, winning the actual chess game, I don't think the rook is that paramount. You know, you need your bishop, you need your knight. But I think the rook is one of the pieces that you can sacrifice in winning the quote-unquote game, which is the Stanley Cup. So if we're using the chess analogy, you could sacrifice your rook because it can bring in some bigger, bigger pieces to help you win the game. What do you think?
Well, there was talk last year, Elliot Friedman reported this, between the St. Louis Blues and Toronto Maple Leafs, and the player coming back the other way was Alex Pietrangelo.
Would you do that deal right now with even he's a pending UFA? Would you do that deal right now?
That complicates it. I don't know that you want Alex Pietrangelo as a rental and then place your bets come July 1st for someone that you have assurance on by way of contract and term.
I need more time to flesh this debate out. That's an interesting question.
I'm going to ask Twitter right now.
Oh, boy, yeah, Leafs Twitter. Okay.
Anyone on the other end.
Throw in a couple picks. Maybe you get a pick back. But I just imagine this team with Pietrangelo on that right side just stabilizing the defense, you know, running a power play. He's got the big shot. He can stop top end offensive players on the other team. That's a player that this team needs. And I think the risk is worth the reward. But obviously, you know, Nylander, he's got term. It's too big of a risk, but you can maybe make a deal to maybe throw in some other pieces. I would do that deal twice on Sunday.
Okay, let's do Leaf Colin then here.
We got Maddie from Nobleton.
Trade talk. Yes.
Let's do it. I want to hear okay, the people now, what they have to say.
My buddy Dennis proposed this last week on Twitter, but it involved Taylor Hall. But let's put William Nylander into that spot. Nurse and Puljujärvi.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
You do that?
Yeah, I think so. I think Nurse would be. I know. You know, you've got the wild card in Puljujärvi. You don't know what you're getting there, right? Like, probably a guy who can score 20 goals, 50 points in this league at some point, which not that much different than Nylander. Nurse is exactly what they're salivating over, essentially, here. You know, the coaches are anyway. Listen, I'm just knee-jerk reactioning it, but
he's
that's
a wonderful
feeling.
Skater. Like, no, like, Darnell Nurse can skate.
Yeah.
Flat out. Has the association, has, you know, played for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, as we all know, Kyle Dubas. Dubas loved him as a junior.
Yeah. By the way, this to me is the most terrifying conversation to have about these sort of things. They're just like, yeah, I would definitely do that. And then I'm going to sit and think about it and regret it. But it feels to
no,
me.
No, I know.
Like,
I'm just doing like late night Leaf talk radio, right?
Yeah, no.
Call up with your crazy trade proposal. Listen, this station was founded on that.
We should do it. Right? I'm ready.
This station
I'm
was
ready.
This, going back to the early days, I used to love calling in the Norm Rumack show.
Yeah.
And listening to Norm Rumack show because this was it, right?
Yeah.
And you'd say, throw things out like, I wouldn't trade Wendell Clark for Sergei Fedorov. Let's go to the phones. And it would be wonderful. But this is.
I recently walked into a pub and had someone say, Marner for Ovechkin, what do you think? Like, what are we even discussing here?
Let's hit a break. When we come back, tour around the NHL from the Canadian team's point of view. Here we are at the 25-game mark, the quarter part of the season. Where is everybody at? I know we focused a lot on the Toronto Maple Leafs and spent some time with the Calgary Flames. What about the other teams around the NHL? That conversation next as Hockey Central continues. Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto. Simulcast on Sportsnet and the NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Hey, Stu, what was that? John Blockington? What was that name?
John Shot Blockington. He invented the Shot Blockington. 1946.
By the way, your gift game. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Merrick, Stewart, and Bourne. Your gift game this weekend was, it's always good. That Chuck E. Cheese, though, dude.
I don't know where I saw that, but I just saw that video, and I just, like, it's I so saw versatile. Everyone's faces. After that goal went in, everyone's looking around to see what happened there.
You got to follow Anthony Stewart on Twitter. The gift game is the strongest. So in that situation, would you have found that GIF, saved it, and then tried to force feed it into a situation? Because the Boston one was perfect.
You gotta have them loaded up. So I have five or six loaded in the chamber, ready to go.
It's a peek behind the curtain at the artistry.
Yeah,
okay.
So I have some. Some of them are saved, but you can find a story out of everything, right? So I have that one. I have the videos. I have the GIFs, but I'm very quick-minded. So I can think of a situation, a movie reference, like, you know, I was referencing Drago a couple minutes ago. Yeah, my mind works very, very weird. You think I have a lot of time on my hands? I don't, but according to my Twitter, I do.
All right, tour around the NHL. I've spent a lot of time with the Maple Leafs. Let's start with the Montreal Canadiens. Injury woes. Jonathan Drouin, Paul Byron, missing time with injury. Wrist for Drouin and knee for Byron. How do we feel about the Habs and their season so far?
I mean, they have exceeded my expectations. They, you know, that top line there with Gallagher and is it Deneau? And I guess it's been Drouin actually for a while here, but they're just so underrated. And just the way this team plays is, you know, Julian is doing an excellent job getting everyone pulling in the right direction. They're tough every night. I will say, I think they're a team that's been getting points, but I don't think they're an amazing team. I think that two losses like that at the same time, that could spell some bad news here for a run.
Thoughts on the Habs?
Winners of the three of the last five. They are now sitting second in the Atlantic. So I think they're quietly getting it done, but what I like about this team, they have that no-quit mentality. They're going to the net, getting those second and third opportunities. And what's most impressive about that team is they're not the biggest team. They're not the biggest.
No.
They got a lot of guys 5'9", 5'10". They got those grunts that are playing heavy, heavy hockey. And coupled with Carey Price and Nat, I think they can be a legitimate, threat in the Eastern Conference.
Talk about expectations. All of this is under the umbrella of what you expect, right?
Yes, exactly.
Ottawa Senators' expectations were low. Expectations were lottery. There have been times where I've watched Ottawa and said, and listen, a lot of it revolves around Jean-Gabriel Pageau and Brady Tkachuk, albeit Thomas Chabot. Sometimes I watch Ottawa and go, man, this is going to be a fun hockey team to watch.
Yeah, yeah. There's something to be said for, like, no expectations, and all of a sudden a good thing happens, and you go, oh, okay, you just go play and see what happens.
Then
you go,
Nelson rips off three great games.
Hey, and all of a sudden it's like, maybe we're not awful here. You know, it kind of forms a little bit of belief. It's so the opposite of going in and expecting to win and being disappointed.
And they have some players that are trying to prove themselves because, you know, they want to get those big contracts. Pageau, I'm not sure if Duclair is up. Is Duclair up after this year? He may or may not be.
I don't know.
But if they shore up that power play, power play is the worst in the league, I think, at 8%. That's something they want to improve. But when expectations are not too high, you know, they could surprise some teams. They're winners of three of the last five games.
Listen, there'll still be a lottery team. We all expect that. And so they're going to be in that conversation for Alexis Lafreniere and Quentin Byfield. Speaking of, do you guys see that game yesterday?
No.
The OHL game? 11-10?
No,
between
really?
Hamilton and Sudbury?
Is Corey Lock playing?
Extra point or what?
Corey Lock.
I got to get my Corey Rock
reference. Corey Lock reference every show. I love it. 11-10. And I think Archer Kaliev had 4 points. Byfield had one
plus
two. It's
a bad night.
Two.
It's 11-10. You're like, oh, falling behind the boys.
No, the weirdest thing about the game, well, first of all, the score is berserk. But second of all, I think it was only Kaliev. The most points that any one player had was four. Yeah. Like, when you see that one team's got 11, Stewie, Justin, and another team has 10, don't you expect someone to have, like, an eight-point night?
Yeah. Well, I know who the Leafs aren't drafting for goaltending.
You always end up begrudging the guy, by the way, who puts up 8 in that game and doesn't score for the next 2 weeks.
All right. Edmonton Oilers.
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl show. We talked about it at the beginning of the season. Can they get into the playoffs riding the coattails of two players? And the answer is yes. I think they're 1-2 in the league, 43 points. They are that good. They are taking games over in the first period, second, and third, getting into overtime, scoring those big goals. They have been everything for this team. 13-6-3, top of the Pacific right now, I believe. If I don't believe it, I'm supposed to shout it to the Hilltops, they are in first place. And it's no fluke because those two are that good.
Okay, here's the question about those two then. Are they the best two players in the league?
Absolutely. Everyone's saying McKinnon and Rantanen, they had some injuries. When you think to top two, I even have another combo in my head because they are that good.
Give me Bergeron, Marchand.
Nope.
Bergeron, Pasternak.
That's a threesome.
Yeah,
because there's three of them, right? So, but 1-2 punch. People gave it to me on Twitter. How are they going to be the best of all time? They are going to go down as one of the best 1-2 punches of all time.
Yeah,
thousand points between the two of them easily.
Yeah, that's not
in 900 games or in 800 games.
Shine up the Hall of Fame plaques. Get
Let's
them ready.
Go.
Yeah, but, you know, I thought Brian Burke made a good point on the show here on Friday where he said, or actually it might have been the time before, whenever Burke, he said it, they're great at home and they don't win on the road. You know, I think they're 6-4-1 on the road. So it's not that they don't win, but they're 7-2 at home because they get to dictate the matchups. They get to dictate who McDavid and Draisaitl play.
Yep.
Suddenly when the defense the other team gets to put out who they want against them and get their matchups, the team as a whole looks less effective. So it speaks to the fact that they are good enough to win a whole lot of games, but I'm not, like I said with Montreal, I don't really consider them a team that's going to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah. And they have the best power play at 32%, but you have the third best penalty kill. So they're playing defense. They're not just saying, hey, let's just wait for the power plays and go get some cookies. They're playing good overall team defense.
Winnipeg Jets still in the playoff picture in the Central.
They just won't go away.
Despite that blue line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Swiss cheese, right? By way of trade, by way of Dustin Byfuglien and that entire saga, I think you got to hand it to Paul Maurice.
Absolutely do. Yeah, I mean, do you expect them to keep this up? Is this do you think they're a playoff team?
I don't know. I hope so because I really love watching Winnipeg Jets play.
I'm the
same way. I'm a big Scheifele guy. I'm a big Josh Morrissey guy.
Yeah.
When Connor Hellebuck is on, and we've seen him get distracted before and take him off his game, real good netminder. I don't know. I like watching Jets.
And Patrick Laine has more to offer. He's, I think, still one, maybe two power play goals. Kyle Connor is like, I tweeted, he looks in fast forward sometimes when he gets going. There's so much talent there. And it's just like, how much can they play in the other end so the back end doesn't matter? against good teams, the back end's going to matter. And that back end is, we can't pretend it's something that's not. It's not very good.
Yeah, but Connor Hallebuck's playing really, really good hockey too. 9-6-1, 2.44, 927. So he's really stabilizing, you know, he's for whatever that back end's lacking, he's picking up the slack with that. And I'm looking at these defensemen. If you would have asked me who they are without doing some research, I would have been like, who? So there's that gif there with Stoop Dog saying who, but they're doing it by committee. But that just attests to the coaching staff and the leadership that they have in that room that they're weathering the storm.
You mentioned Patrick Laine. He's a different player this year. This isn't just a guy that's waiting on the half boards for the one-timer, feed me, feed me, feed me. Here's a guy that's making plays.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that's passing the puck as well. I mean, there was that challenge that was out there. Like, okay, you sign the show me contract. Okay. His big money is still out there. What more do you have? And I think Patrick Laine is showing Winnipeg Jets fans and the entire NHL that he's more than just that guy with the hard shot.
Yeah, well, and the fact that
you never seemed interested in doing it. Like that potential was always there.
Yeah, I just think of the couple of the passes he's made the past few games. It's like if he has that shot and he can dish, he's LeBron James. Like he can do it all at that point. He can be unstoppable, and that's why he frustrates people when he's not that, because it seems like it's all there. There's not a thing you can point to and say he can't do that. So it's great to see him put it together.
Well, it's good because that's the natural evolution of a player. He's now going into his fourth season. I think with him sitting out and having those comments sort of be, you know, misconstrued and necessary, maybe in the newspaper, it got them to have a conversation. So sometimes all you need is a conversation to air out, you know, what your grievances are. And that could, you know, help turn around your career. So it's great that he's turning it around and he's having a big season also.
Mm-hmm. Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I'll take the take on the Canucks here. I think this is a very interesting hockey team just because that division is gettable and they have a different style of play. You know, now with the additions that they made in the offseason, they've got a more physical presence. And their young players are just so electric with Pettersson and Besser. And you know, you said Gaudette's playing well.
Gaudette's been outstanding.
They're wearing the skate jersey, which is an automatic five standings points.
That was nice.
You know, they just look like they believe. It's exciting. There's hope. And I've always thought that Travis Green is an excellent coach. Yep. But he's an excellent coach who's tailored to coach players that play a well-rounded game. You know, we used to go up against them in Utica. And he likes a physical team. He likes a team that plays D. He is more of a conservative coach. And I think this roster is well-tailored to his style of coaching.
They were struggling as of late, but I just love watching Pettersson. I love watching him on the power play. He's got, looking at it here, I think he's got the 25 points already. So for me, it's a little bit, I think they're lacking a little bit of the depth. I'm not really sold on the goaltending, but this is a playoff team just based on almost like the Edmonton factor where they have that high octane offense. The players like JT Miller are stepping up. They have some injuries and Sutter's out for a little bit now. They're a team that I thought this was going to be a ranking where you give them a grade. I give them a B minus. So don't ask me why I'm giving them a B minus, but that's what they get.
We just saw Colorado and Vancouver go head-to-head on Saturday. We just saw another amazing performance out of Cale Makar right now, leading the charge for the Calder Trophy. Can Quinn Hughes close that gap?
No, because Ekblad won it his rookie year as a defense with 39 points. Cale Makar already has 22. So do the math on that. I think he's going to finish with over 90. Is he going to get 80 points? Maybe not, but he's probably going to have 75 points.
I don't know. Why not?
He's going to have a minimum of 75 points. And doing that as a rookie defenseman coming in and stepping up offensively like that, you're probably going to be in, you know, the company of some great NHL players. So to do that in your first year as a defenseman, it's an automatic. It's an automatic. He's running away with it. I'd like to comment a little bit closer to Christmas or after Christmas, but he's the surefire Calder Trophy winner.
The rookie record for most points by a defenseman is 76, set by Larry Murphy. I want to say that was either 1979 or 1980 when he was paired with Dave Lewis.
And he still got booed out of Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the sights.
You know this. They always pick one defenseman in Toronto.
Somebody told me the waffles are coming out. Somebody tweeted me.
Oh, bring that back. Oh, the waffles are back. But listen, I don't know. You sort of say, can he get 80? I don't know. Why not? If he's healthy and getting those minutes, like honestly, it may sound like hyperbole. I may be sort of over-exaggerating here to prove a point. When you look at the best defenseman that you've seen so far this year in the NHL, Cale Makar is in that conversation. Is he not?
Did you just
We're a quarter.
Did you just imply Norris?
I'm not implying Norris. I don't have a Norris conversation yet. Calder, I'm happy to have. Norris is a different level of serious. But if you look at defensemen in the NHL right now, is he not in your conversation a quarter of the way in for one of, and some might say, the best defenseman in the league right now, Cale Makar? Crazy as that sounds.
And it's, you know, it speaks to the wins and losses of the Colorado Avalanche. Like, he has moved the needle. He's driving that bus there. You know, obviously they have that great top line that does it too, but from the back end, he's the guy.
But that top line now is Calvert-Donskoy with Nathan MacKinnon. Like,
Yeah, no, for sure. He has definitely been such a crazy difference maker. It's impossible not to notice him when you watch the games. And as you said, like, with that point total, that 76, you know, being the record, like, that's legitimately, that's gettable for him. And it's his rookie year. You know what I think of is when we're talking about how insanely good he is when you look at golfers, they say that as they get older, their nerves get them. Like, they get smarter and they're more aware of, like, what it means to your career to do these amazing things and to get this win. And like, they get nervous as they get older, but when they're younger, they're just oblivious. They're just doing it. And that's Makar to me. It looks like, you know, he's achieved this sort of flow state in his brain where it's just happening. He's not thinking. There's no hesitation. His brain's turned off. It just is a hockey
player. I'm going to eat a little bit of crow here, because I remember last year when Pedersen was lighting it up and me laughing at Colorado saying, huh, you should have took this guy. And someone said, well, Cale Makar is going to be good. And I was like, yeah, okay. So yeah. I'll take the heat from the fans that gave that to me. I'll apologize for that, because he's the real deal. Because I actually remember that specifically. Yeah.
Pedersen's real good though, dude. Pedersen's real good. Really quickly, Calgary Flames. We mentioned them in the first hour, but quick thought on Calgary. This is a tough stretch, and getting bageled two games in a row doesn't help.
Yeah, they have too much offensive players to not be producing offensively. They got the 17th best power play. I think they'd be in the top five just based on Goudreau and Monahan, but they have 10 goals between the two of them. It's not good enough. I know they're playing good hockey on both sides of the puck, but if you looked at me and said Matthew Tkachuk would be leading this team in points and not fights and fighting the goalies, I would say you're crazy. So they need to step up offensively, because they're just too talented of a team. Going by my rating system, I give them a C+, but it's a long season. And our producer Maddie mentioned that I had Monahan in the top 10 scoring, or sorry, Johnny Goudreau in the top 10 scoring. And I'm still going to stick by that, because I think he's that talented of a player.
All right, you're hanging in. Yep. All right, you're hanging in there. Not the fastest team in the NHL, the Calgary Flames there, Justin.
No, and even their stars aren't necessarily, like, their biggest names are not fleet of foot, but it doesn't mean you can't win with that. I feel like they've proven they can be successful even without that as an attribute. But, you know, we're at the point in the season where, you know, with Leafs West out there, that, you know, I read an article today, you know, should the Flames trade Johnny Goudreau? And it's like, you can make a case that maybe that's not the worst idea in the world. You know, he hasn't had playoff success. They're lacking there and looking for a change. I'm not making the case, but certainly the people are getting nervous out there in Calgary.
Not a good time, but good times here as always. We had a break. We'll come back. What were your other? You're the professor here. What were your other rankings for the teams? And you giving out grades? What do you got?
Quickly, go to break. Toronto, a C, Calgary C+, Vancouver B-, Winnipeg B-, Montreal B+, Edmonton A, Ottawa C+.
And that's just based on expectations.
Yeah, just based on.
We hit a break. Maddie has questions next. Hockey Central carries on. Sportsnet 590, The Fan in Toronto. Sportsnet, NHL Network.
Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. A couple things. You can win one of three $900 Craftsman Tools prize packs, including new power drills and much more. Stay tuned for the Craftsman code words, or visit sportsnet.ca/590 for details. Today's code word is savings. Enter savings right now at sportsnet.ca/590 for your chance to win, courtesy of Craftsman Tools. This contest is open to Ontario residents only. And immediately following this show, it is Writer's Block. Jeff Blair and Stephen Brunt today, I believe, Matt Marchese. Chris Johnston is on at 2:25 Eastern. Matt Devlin on the Raptors West Coast Road Swing at 3 o'clock Eastern. Jay Busby from Yahoo Sports on the Colin Kaepernick situation, and Roundtable 4 to 5, Scott MacArthur and Michael Trakos. Okay.
Let him get it out of the way.
So are you B1 or B2 today? You got your bananas and
there
pajama shirt. So looking good. Looking
you
good.
Out the picture of
it's already there. It's already there for the record.
Shirt.
Yep.
That's a good look.
One day I'm going to get sick of this, but I need the airtime.
The man women forgot.
Put that on your Instagram.
Mark Yeezy.
All right, guys. What happens first in Toronto? Jeff mentioned it. Usually
Hang on.
The coach
this is
gets...
Maddie has questions. Every day we conclude the show with our producer asking questions. Go ahead.
Okay, you mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
Coach gets a trade. But what happens first in Toronto? They get a trade to shake things up, or the coach, they move on from the coach?
I'll take the trade vote. I think that Dubas is going to be a little bit more patient than I think the general public has believed. So I'll vote for the trade.
Same here. You have to make a trade to try to shake things up. Firing the coach, as Berkey says, is a last case resort. So I think make a couple trades, see if you can improve the team before you fire the coach.
Now, this is great. It's a tough spot for Merrick here because it'd be boring if he says the same as us.
I go coach. I think
that's good radio.
You're capped out. You're filled out. You've made your moves. You've gone all in on the season. This is it. And we've known this from day one. And we said to ourselves, I think, at the end of last season when Mike Babcock came back, let's see what happens in the first quarter part of the season.
What about trade the coach? What about trade the coach? Make a coach trade.
Has happened. Quebec and New York Rangers, first round draft pick going the other way. But I don't believe you can trade a coach now.
And I don't think you can do it in season, yeah.
It has happened in the NHL.
Speaking of coaches, which coach who is on a new team this year has done the best job through the quarter point of the season? So we got Aikens, Tippett, Smith, Kruger, McClellan, Vigneault, and Quenneville.
Would have said Kruger in the first month.
Yeah. Now a little more hesitant there.
Things are kind of
slipped on a
off.
Banana peel.
Although
banana in pajamas.
What are the options again?
Eakins, Tippett, Smith, Kruger, McClellan, Vigneault, Quenneville.
My vote is for DJ Smith because there is the real chance to go in as a new coach into Ottawa, and they're like 1-18 right now. Like, it felt like their roster was that far behind the Atlantic Division, which is very good. They're hanging in there, man. I think they've looked good at 5-on-5, as I've mentioned. So
heard that Smith. Before.
To me, it's either Dallas Eakins or Lane Vigneault. I mean, Eakins, they're trying to break in a lot of rookies into that lineup and try to qualify for the playoffs. Still with players like Ryan Getzlaf still very much involved. But man, Vigneault's got that team. Was it 15 games in a row with a point or 14 games in a row with a point for the Philadelphia Flyers?
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
I don't know. I'll take Vigneault.
Just because.
Expectations.
Because he opens and closes the door and says, okay, Leon, Connor, go.
Yeah.
No, because everyone expected that they were just going to, not leave defense to the wayside, but they're actually playing a pretty good structure system where they're not just going playing run and gun. They're not just waiting for the power play. I know they have the two best players in the world, but they're not just going back and forth trying to shoot the lights out.
Said two best players in the world? Yep. I thought Austin Matthews was top three and wasn't three.
Okay, well, we're not going by what I said in the past. We're going by what I'm saying today.
Corey Schneider hits waivers
today. Life is lived in the past, but experienced in the future or something like that.
Corey Schneider hits waivers today. Do we think he ends up back in the NHL at some point? Do not forget, he's got 2 years left at $6 million per.
Man, that body has been through it. You know, one of the shames of all of this is that Corey Schneider gave his best years to a team that was not at its best. That's always bad when you see, specifically the goaltender, when you're giving a team your best years and that team is nowhere close to winning, at the end of it, you can't help but feel bad for that guy. Yeah. But his body's been through a ton.
Yeah. He's done?
I think he's done. I just don't see it. The contract is just too much. You wonder if he's not one of those guys that ends up getting a LTI retired, as the saying goes. Like, it's
my
just,
back.
Well, who knows? Maybe it's a bit of a confidence boost. Maybe he goes down to the minors. If they end up making the playoffs, he comes back and he gets in a game and saves their series. You never know. But too many injuries. It's been a long career. But hoping for the best.
I still thought in his prime, he was one of the best goaltenders in the game. And wasn't a blocker. Like, wasn't just one of those goaltenders that came out and blocked shots.
Yeah,
he made saves.
Yeah, he active, and so he was behind Luongo or with Luongo there for a while. And
he's part of the Horvat trade.
Yeah, he looked like one of the best goaltenders in the league for about a 3-year stretch. But injuries caught up, and as you said, he played for some tough teams there in New Jersey.
That's it, eh, Matty?
I had a quick one, but we're not going to get to it.
We got 15 seconds. Is it yes or no?
Paul Bissonnette, can he make an NLL team after his tweet?
No.
Even if he was good enough, they wouldn't let him.
Good for him, though. Love him. Love that guy. Thanks for joining us. Hockey Central back tomorrow at 12.